Welcome to Food for Thought. I am Dee Anderson.
Hello, Dee. Nice to meet you, Dee. You're not Dee Dee McGrail. And I'm Laura Mangone.
Not Dee Dee McGrail anymore.
Hello, people. It's been, we had our first snowfall last night. It's very pretty out. Kind of glad I'm not out in it. Now, at your new place, you have a crew, right? You don't have to do anything?
Well, yeah, they came last night. I was really impressed. They were shoveling our steps and driveway, snow blowing our driveway. But then we just assumed they were going to come back.
Right.
And they never did. So there was a second dumping of snow.
So and then they never came back?
They never came back.
Oh.
So I'm kind of glad I didn't have to go to work because I assumed it was all going to be completely clear.
Right. But now the sun is out, so it's probably melting already, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know what the temperature is, but I think so.
It's. I walked up the driveway a little while ago. It's not, doesn't really feel, I guess because it's not windy, it doesn't feel that cold.
It's not
so
bad.
I love how when it snows, it's so quiet.
Yeah.
You know? Like, just all the sounds are muffled. I love it.
So you have some cooking to talk about. You've been cooking all morning.
I do. I have been baking all morning. So my grandmother and her mother before her, and probably her mother before her, every year makes a Christmas sweetbread that in Italian is basically called a pan dolce, which is sweet bread. But in my grandmother's dialect, Genoese dialect, it got bastardized into pandusa. So we have always called it pandusa, but pan dolce, it's not a big stretch to how it got to pandusa.
So is that like when you talk about a Christmas sweetbread, is that like the panettone that you would buy?
It's similar. Panettone is more of a spongy texture. This is more of a dense bread, but it does have dark raisins, golden raisins, pinoli nuts, which is a whole nother story I'll get into in a minute. It's a yeast bread. So it literally from start to finish is about 6 hours to get it done because you start with the starter and then you add flour to it and you let it proof for an hour. And then you add more flour and let it proof again or rise, I should say. Then you incorporate a mixture of butter and brown sugar and raisins and nuts and a little bit more yeast, and then it rises for a second time.
Wow.
Then you punch it down, which is something that you do, you know, to sort of deflate it, to get the carbon dioxide out, to reactivate the yeast. So the yeast finds different parts of it to eat. Basically, that's how yeast works. It's looking for gluten to eat. So you punch it down, then you let it rise again. Then you knead it. Then you let it rise again. It's very time consuming.
Wow.
And then you separate your loaves.
So the pinoli nuts and the raisins, they're all just throughout the bread?
They're all throughout. Yes.
Wow. I've never had anything like this.
It's really delicious. And it's, I mean,
I would imagine, I'm thinking French toast.
I would never. It would be like blasphemy. Nope. We just slice it. And sometimes I toast it and have it with butter, which is, you know, my grandmother used to scold us and say, how can you put butter on that if you knew how much butter was in there? It's got a pound of butter in it. And usually you get four loaves. I made two smaller loaves. I made the regular batch, but I have five loaves instead of four. So two of them are slightly smaller, which one will go to Uncle Joe. I'm going to keep this other smaller one, and my two brothers and my sister will each get a loaf. So yeah, it's a process.
You might have told me this already, but considering COVID, what are you doing for Christmas Eve? And you're also having surgery.
Having surgery tomorrow morning. I think tomorrow morning I'm going to find out what time. I'm just going to be here. Annie's children are coming down, but they all get tested, like the real test, the PCR test, not a rapid test. Just her two daughters, the two girls, Kelly and Molly, are coming down.
And what's their exposure to other people?
After they get their tests, they're nothing. They're quarantining. But on a regular basis, they don't have a lot of exposure to anybody. They're all working from home. You know, they're getting takeout. They're not seeing anyone.
Right.
And they're all very, very, very diligent about it. I mean, they're all been super cautious.
Can we just take a second to talk about this? I mean, I know it's not food related, but it's, you know, holiday related and COVID related. So I think it's relevant. I find now that the holidays have been here with Thanksgiving, which we didn't get together with family at all. Don and I just stayed home, we put it in the backsplash and ate sandwiches for dinner.
Right.
Now with Christmas approaching, it's really tough. It's really tough because some people in our immediate family are really not that careful at all. They just see this as, you know, kind of no big deal, or,
oh boy,
you know, hey, our immune systems are going to take care of us. And
that's scary to me.
It's, you know, like I can't be with my own kids. Don can't be with his kids, although his kids are going to his brother's house because they're having a small, you know, their kids, Don's kids, and their neighbors. Now, we don't find that to be safe.
Do they all test?
No, of course not. And Don sent me an article yesterday that was a study of COVID cases. It said that you are 10 times more likely to get COVID from a family gathering.
Yes.
Compared to anything else that you would do, you know, going to the grocery store or having limited exposure to people even with no mask. A family gathering
with
no masks and you're sitting in the same space for a number of hours, that you're 10 times more likely. So we, you know, we take that very seriously.
Yeah, as you should.
I suggested that, you know, Don's brother and his wife are having Christmas Eve and they're having a small group, but they're still having a group. No one's being tested. And I said, well, why don't you, he said something to the effect of, well, you know, he used the word freaks, like we're being freakish in terms of our approach to this. And I think
struggling. They understand they're taking their life in their hands.
I know, but tell
or
that
someone to else's them. Life.
I know. Tell that to them. They don't feel that that's what they're doing, but it's just very hard. You know, this is the first year that, you know, we have our own place and the kids are now an hour away. It's breaking his heart that he's not going to be with his kids.
I totally get it. And you know what? It is what it is. Unfortunately, the situation is not great. So because I am going to be sort of out of commission because I'm going to be recuperating, I sort of had, you know, I did all my Christmas stuff earlier. I went to all my nieces and nephews or my siblings and Mario's siblings to drop off gifts. And it was like, didn't go in anybody's house, just, you know, masked up, just drop things off. No, we're all taking this very seriously. I mean, also I'm speaking from the point of view of someone who I know 16 people that have died. So, you know,
tell me how has that number crept up since we last spoke?
I think it was 14 the last time we spoke, but you know, I have a lot of friends that I'm, in touch with on Facebook, whether it's people that used to live in my old neighborhood or were high school friends or college friends and, you know, parents, siblings, old people, young people, my best friends, mother-in-law and father-in-law and his daughters, So basically, I mean, I call her my niece, but you know, my niece's new father-in-law, like it's all hitting rather close to home. And these are all people that don't have illnesses, you know, don't have really anything major happening, and they just got it.
And yet there are still folks that think that this is sort of a hoax. There are people on their deathbeds that think that this is a hoax, but,
I've been seeing things on the news where it's people on their deathbed reporting and say, listen, people, this is for real. This is not bullshit.
Right. Alternatively, there are people that are seeing the light as they're like at the end.
As they're dying. Rope,
but there are people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Yeah. I was looking up another statistic, which I had read months ago, in terms of trying to compare COVID deaths to flu deaths. Mm-hmm. And over the past 10, 15, 20 years, there has been, the deaths related to the flu have been anywhere between 12,000 and 60,000 per year. Mostly the average is, when you take, you know, 1 year where it was only 12,000, the average is about 30,000.
Right.
When you compare that,
to where we are right now.
Where we are right now.
In 8 months.
Which is virtually, and 8 months or 9 months is about 10 times that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe, I mean, but I have to say, I don't know if I told you, I finally had, now I know a bunch of people, maybe a half a dozen to a dozen people who have had COVID.
Right.
And two died.
Mm-hmm.
One is our age and has permanent lung damage. One is 32 and has now a long-term, she has like an autoimmune disease because of COVID. But I heard from, did I tell you I heard from Vinny?
No.
Vinny and Leanne. Now these are folks who are, Vinny had chemo last year.
Right.
He's about 60 something and Leanne is probably in her late 50s and they were fine. Right. They got through it. It was like the flu and not even the worst flu they've ever had. It was just like, you know, up a few nights coughing and they're totally fine. But, you know, and I was so happy to have known people who got through it with no issue.
Right.
But it's just not worth the risk to me. Like I know I'll probably be fine. I'll probably be like Vinny and Leanne that I, you know, but what about the 4-year-olds that are fighting for their life? It's just
so my sister had a scare last week or a couple of weeks ago. She has a car and her neighbors on Staten Island do not have a car. So she gave them a ride to Trader Joe's. And a couple of days later, the man in the relationship tested positive, although his wife was negative. So my sister went and got a PCR, you know, my sister, her boyfriend, you know, everybody that she is in contact with went and got a test. Thankfully, everybody was negative. But now the woman in the relationship is in the hospital on oxygen, like not doing well. It's my sister's dear friend. Really? So it's really serious. Anyway, let's get back to food a little bit.
But one more quick question. Are you going to get vaccinated?
I don't know. I don't know.
Me neither.
I mean, I'd like to, and I know everybody's saying it's safe, but I'm the one that ran out and got the Lyme's vaccine. 6 months later, got the Lyme's booster, and 6 months later, they took it off the market.
Right.
So, I'm a little weary about, you know, long-term testing. Now we're not even, you know, they are just starting to give out. Yes, the trials have been going on, but still, what is that, 3 months ago? I don't know. I really don't know. So we've only got a little bit of time left. I just want to touch back on the Christmas bread because one of the ingredients is pinoli nuts, which are pine nuts. And you can find them at ShopRite. You can find them in lots of other, you know, lots of grocery stores, except the ones that you find in grocery stores are probably like $12 a pound, and they are short and round, and they are Chinese pine nuts. That's not what we use in the Christmas bread.
Uh-huh.
We use the Italian pine nuts, which are not so easy to find. You have to go to a pretty ritzy, I mean, even the Italian grocery stores in Chambersburg, you can, sometimes they have them, sometimes they sell out in like 2 seconds. So I ended up going to a place in the village, ironically, where my aunt used to buy them for Pandusa every year in Greenwich Village. And last year, my sister paid $54 for a pound. So 54 wow. bucks a pound. This year, I paid $66 a pound.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're you know,
and there's a significant difference between the pine nuts that we get at the store.
Yes, it's a different flavor, different shape, totally different flavor. The other ones, the Chinese, I would imagine, because I've used them in other things. I've used them in cookies. I've used them in breads and cakes. They sort of disintegrate. They have more of a fat content to them. So, you know, the Italian pinolis are the gold star, and, you know, that's what we use in ours. So that's the one, literally the only ingredient that really costs, you know, the rest of it is raisins and sugar, flour, yeast.
I don't know when we're going to see each other live. I know we're running out of time, but when we're going to see each other in person again, but could you take a slice of that bread and put it in the freezer and give it to me next time?
I can do that. Absolutely.
I just really have to try it.
I can totally do that. All right. When we come back, more food.
Food, vegan, etc., and lots of other things.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
And welcome back. So what did you do this week with your vegan stuff?
Yeah, so what I love, I really love this whole vegan thing. And if I didn't have these vegan clients, I would never be taking it to this level.
Right.
Because I'm just not interested. I'm just not interested. But when you have a family who really adheres to this, and what kind of is so fun for me is the failure. Like I've had some, I remember I have an old friend, Freddie, who's a chef.
I remember Freddie.
you know, Freddie. And when we were working together many years ago, and I was working in the office at a catering business outside of Princeton, and he would make a staff lunch. Now, lots of times we had many ingredients on hand, and he would make these amazing things. And then during the winter was the lean months. We didn't have a lot. Right. So he wasn't permitted to like buy chicken breasts for the staff meal if we didn't have any. So he would just do stuff out of the pantry. And this guy was so incredibly talented with food. I still regard him as one of the guys that just really gets it. Mm-hmm. And for example, he made one meal. He took a big, you know, those big giant cans of tuna, you know, the commercial, you know, cans of tuna. And he made a sauce for pasta, and he used capers and garlic and the tuna. He might have even been heavy cream in it. It was the best thing you've ever tasted, you know.
I'm sure.
It was just amazing. Yeah. And then I remember one time he made something, and we all kind of looked at him like, and he goes, "Well, you know, fuck you. They can't all be pearls." So I've always, you know, throughout the years, I've thought, you know, once in a while, I'll say, when I have a failure, I'll say, well, they can't all be pearls, you know.
Right.
What I find with my vegan journey, I'm saying they can't all be pearls a lot.
That's okay.
Because there's stuff
That's okay because you're learning, and you'll probably, and you can make something from your mistake, most probably. So are you, I'm assuming you're not wasting, right? You're not wasting things?
No, there's nothing that's been inedible.
Right. So if it doesn't work, you recreate it or use it in some other way.
For example, I tried to make vegan butter. Mm-hmm. And it's a coconut oil and, but the refined, or what's the one that doesn't taste like coconut? And it calls for, what is that? It'll come to me. Anyway, it came out like a hard brick. Like it didn't slice like butter at all. So what I did was I just cut it up into chunks. I put it in the freezer and I used it for my fat when I was cooking stuff. So that's good. Seitan has become what I'm realizing is really, really not easy to master. Mm-hmm. And I've been researching it like crazy, and the recipes for it are so wildly different with their method, with the ingredients. It all calls for that whole, like that gluten flour. It's like, I forget what it's called, but it's like pure gluten flour. It's not like your regular flour, and a little bit of chickpea flour. But I made my first batch. My vegan client said, tastes very good. Texture, it was a little dense. And so she told me that she had had seitan before, that actually you could pull it apart like it was shredded meat.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because you keep saying seitan, like Satan.
Seitan.
It sounds funny when you're saying seitan.
Seitan. I know. I sometimes say seitan, but it's seitan. And she said she's had
the work of the devil.
I know. I wish they would call it seitan, but it's actually pronounced seitan. So seitan. You have to. Yep. So she thought it before, where you kind of pull it apart, like mm-hmm. it's as if it's like a shredded meat. So I made another batch. The first batch it's a dough, basically. It's all flour.
Right.
And it's a dough, and you roll it into a log and you twist it up into tin foil and you steam it. Okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't horrible. That we made a few good recipes with it, but the texture wasn't there. So then I thought, I don't want to make a log, because when I made it like a chicken or a seitan piccata,
right.
You know, you got these perfect cylindrical, you know, it's a cylindrical piece that you're cutting these slices. It just doesn't look very natural.
Right.
So I thought, this time I'm going to try to shape it and form it to look like chicken breast, mm-hmm. so that at least it just kind of looks more like that.
Right.
The recipe boasted that because they used baking powder, was it baking powder or cornstarch? I think it was baking powder in the recipe, that it is not the rubbery, quote unquote, rubbery seitan that you had. It's Well, they were
If you're adding baking powder, it's leavening it a little bit. It's a little lighter. It's a little, the consistency has changed. That makes sense.
It wasn't very good. The taste was there. Certainly aesthetically, it was better because it looks like, I'll send you the picture later. Actually, I can send the picture if you want to use it for the Facebook post, but the flavor was there. The flavor was good. The texture was a little chewy.
Yeah.
Spongy. You know, it's not, certainly not. So I'm excited to, you know, I haven't done this in a long time where I have to make something 10 times to find the perfect version of it.
Right.
Another thing I started to make this morning was a vegan version of matzo ball soup.
Okay.
Now, I have never, this is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. I have never eaten matzo ball soup.
Oh, really? Oh, it's so good. And
I've never made it.
I mean, there's definitely a knack to matzo balls. I mean, the first couple of batches I made, they were either too light and falling apart, or they were lead balloons. So there's definitely, you have to, you know, there's a feel to how much egg whites you put into it. Or in your case, now you're using different products because you're not using eggs. So
yes. And
so
that's,
what were you using?
That's another really huge thing with vegan cooking, what I'm learning now, which is the egg substitute. Now there's an egg substitute that would be appropriate for like a matzo ball. Mm-hmm. And they call it, what I think is the best one, they call it flaxseed egg.
Okay.
And I remember figuring out on my own not too long ago that flax seeds are a binder. So if you, like for crab cakes, if I'm trying to do a no carb crab cake, I'll add just a little ground flaxseed to the mix, or I'll just put it on the outside of the crab cake and it binds it. So it didn't surprise me that flaxseed egg is ground flaxseed that's mixed with water that you put in the refrigerator for 5 minutes. Hmm. And it's a binder. I mean, these matzo balls, when I rolled them up, they are not falling apart. I can tell they are not falling apart.
Yeah, but the egg in the matzo balls not only is a binder, but it's adding
flavor,
a lightness to it. So you whip the egg whites at the end and fold it into your mixture. So it's really. Yeah, I mean, I would think that if you're putting baking powder in it, it would have the same leavening effect. So it would make them light and airy because they should be light. They shouldn't be big dough balls. They should be.
I have a feeling. I have a feeling these are going to be dough balls. But I guess my point is, there's part of me that loves that I don't know the answer.
Right.
You know,
you're learning. It's fun.
We can read recipes, not vegan, but we can read a number of recipes and say, "Oh, you know what? I'm not doing that. I'm not doing what you're telling me to do because I know for my own personal taste and my experience, I'm not doing it." When I look at some of these vegan recipes, I have no perception.
You have no point of reference to say, I don't want to do this.
Do what they say. And then sometimes I try to twist it. But so I made the matzo balls and there is a product now that Better Than Bouillon has come out with, which is called a no chicken base, meaning that it's.
We had this conversation and I don't understand how they make it taste like chicken if it's not chicken.
I don't either. And I'm sure there's probably some things, there's a lot of things in vegan cooking for ingredients that are not necessarily that good for you, or they might have
flavor,
all kinds of other crap, but it just doesn't have meat in it, you know? Yeah. So I don't know, but so
interesting.
So yeah, my vegan.
So did they eat it yet? Did you have it yet?
No, this is my snow day. And so I made my seitan. I realized I cut the seitan into some smaller pieces and I fried it in some oil to see if that would then change the consistency. And it does improve it a lot. Right. And what's so cool about seitan, when you brown it, because it's purely, it's all gluten.
Right.
It's not meat. So if you want to get something nice and brown, if you have chicken or something, you would dredge it in flour. You'd have to do this. Seitan browns perfectly all by itself.
because it's got it all in there.
it's all gluten. So it's like you just put it into oil and you get this beautiful crispy thing.
Right.
So that's kind of exciting.
So every time you talk about these things, last week I had the same thought go through my head. Rather than just using the flour or making that mixture with the flour, wouldn't it be appropriate to add some vegetables in there? Like some drained spinach or some, you know, something else to.
That's a really good point. And that's something that I thought about this morning, is that why does it have to be so dense with the gluten flour? Why can't it be broken up with a puree?
Potatoes, spinach.
Potatoes, yeah. Whatever, to just kind of lighten it up so it's not like this gluten pancake, you know?
Yeah, then it becomes, you know, it could be like a zucchini burger. It could be like a spinach cake.
I would love a potato pancake. Right. I would love to come up with one that's like my own, you know? Right. And I actually thought, I'm trying to figure out how to reach out to Ross. Remember Ross from Sprig and Vine?
Yes.
So he's a real vegan chef. Like, and I think if you're a real vegan chef, it takes you years before you perfect some of this. I mean, mm-hmm. I have successfully made cashew cream, I am happy to say.
Right.
So cashew cream is something that you would add to thicken things and make it seem creamy. And it's basically from raw cashews that have been soaked in water and pureed in a high powered blender. So and I found that even though when you have it raw, you know, after you've pureed it in the blender, you still feel a little bit of grit on your tongue. But when you put it into a sauce, that melts and there's no grit whatsoever. Right. So it's kind of an amazing
product.
It's fun learning about this stuff. It's fun not knowing what you're doing.
That's
great. You know, and then to perfect something, if I can do it all by myself, which means that I'm going to try 10 versions of seitan and I'm going to figure out how to make the best one. And apparently my client, when she was living in Brooklyn, there was a store that carried a store-made brand. She's never made it on her own.
Right.
And they carried a brand that she thought was amazing, and she has not been able to find it here in New Jersey. So, you know, I'm kind of on a mission. Not that I ever want to be vegan myself, but I want to master it for other people.
Well, and you have been doing it. I mean, over the past weeks, you've been talking about a lot of stuff.
I'm learning. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is cauliflower crust. I think that's one of the things, and I was hoping for next segment we could talk about some Christmas Eve foods that...
All right, I also, I made some pasta today.
Okay.
Fresh pasta. I made sausage yesterday, homemade sausage. So...
Well, how much time do we have? Why don't we use the next 3 minutes to talk about that?
I'll probably need more than 3 minutes for the sausage, but the pasta was super quick. Mario had made some angel hair the other day, and we have 2 minutes.
Okay. I have to pee. That's what this means, Laura.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So, I made some pasta today. I was done with making the bread. I was in between when the bread was on its, can't remember if it was the second or the third rise. And Mario had made some angel hair pasta the other day. And we had it and it was delicious. And there was a little bit left over that we did not cook. So I have some fresh pasta. And I was like, well, it's not really enough for a meal. So I made a little batch of pasta. And basically my pasta recipe is the easiest thing you can think of. It's for every cup of flour, you put one egg, one tablespoon of oil, and one teaspoon of water. So that's basically it. If you want to make, you know, four times the recipe, it's 4 cups of flour, 4 eggs, 4 tablespoons of oil, 4 teaspoons of water, and a little bit of salt. And that's it. I zip, zip, zip in the Cuisinart, and I take it out, and I knead it for a little bit, and then I let it rest. And it's actually on my counter resting right now. I'm going to zip it through my little angel hair machine later. And there you have it. Very easy.
So you have a pasta maker. Like you put it through, you're making angel hair?
When I make angel hair, I mean, everything else I cut myself. Linguine, I'll cut fettuccine, I'll cut linguine, I'll make gnocchi, I'll make cavatelli, I make ravioli because you just need the sheets. But when I make angel hair, I use the, we have two different machines. I have an attachment that can get connected to my KitchenAid mixer. So it's basically just the cutter. And I feed it through, I roll it out with a rolling pin and then feed it through that, and it's cutting it very thin. Or I have one of those old crank machines where you just, you know, you put it through to flatten it, then you put it through a cutter. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So that was it. And when we come back, I will tell you all about my homemade sausage that I made.
Cool beans.
All right. We'll be right back.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and medical expenses are covered. If you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over 60, call 24/7 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for just $99. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Explore the river towns of New Hope and Lambertville and be part of the fun. Shop in the area's most unique stores, from antiques to toys to apparel, and you're sure to find a one-of-a-kind treasure. Make a reservation at one of Lambertville or New Hope's variety of dining options for dinner, wine, beer, or an artisan cocktail. Indoors or out, grab an ice cream cone to enjoy by the river for the first Friday fireworks. Create memories that will last a lifetime at the river towns of New Hope and Lambertville, where everyone is welcome. Visit DelawareRiverTowns.com.
We're back.
We're back.
So yeah, I made Italian sausage yesterday.
Now I'm impressed by this. It's one of the things that I've never done is made my own sausage. So I'm going to want you to really like the casing, everything. Like, what did you do?
Well, I did sort of my own little method because I didn't feel like pulling out my machine that has like the little fitting on it to fill the sausages. So I just did it. I have a funnel. So I just slipped the casing on the end of the funnel and I just sort of packed it down with my fingers in it and then twisted it and packed it down. So it was
so cool. So where do you get the casing?
At ShopRite.
Really?
Yeah. Just ask at the butcher section.
I didn't know that. I didn't know. Yeah. I would like some sausage casing, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. So, I don't know why. I was just in the mood for it because I like when I make it and it's the easiest thing. I mean, you can make it with anything, but generally I'm making sort of like a quote unquote Italian, you know, fennel sausage. So I mix pork and I saute onions and garlic in a pretty nice amount of butter. And then after I turn it off, after it's translucent and I turn it off, I sprinkle in there. I mean, obviously you can do it with fresh herbs. I had dry basil, dry oregano, and dry fennel that I put in my mortar and pestle and like crush it up a little bit to sort of wake it up.
Right. And
threw that in there. I threw in a handful of fresh parsley. I threw in a handful of Parmesan cheese. and some crushed red pepper. Oh, I'm sorry. I also in the mortar, I had crushed red pepper flakes.
Wow. Okay.
And salt and pepper.
The pork? What's the pork? Is it ground?
It's ground pork. I haven't done anything with the ground pork yet. This is just onions, garlic.
Okay.
All the herbs thrown in the saute pan after the vegetables are translucent. And then I let it cool down a little bit. And as I'm adding, you know, cold parsley and Parmesan cheese, it's helping it cool down a little bit more so I can handle it. And then I basically pour that all over the pork that I just have in a, you know, out on a pan. And I put a little bit, and I don't know why, I just have always done this. I don't know where I even heard about this, but I sprinkle a little bit of red wine vinegar on it.
Uh-huh.
And I crunch, you know, mix it all up with my hands. And if the texture isn't as smooth as I like, I may put it through the Cuisinart. In this case, I did not. I just mixed it all up with my hands. But there's nice pieces, you know, there's chunks of onion there that you can see the herbs, the Parmesan. You can, you know, it's pretty colorful, actually.
I'm like fascinated right now.
Okay, good.
because I just, this is something that it's never been on my list of what I thought I should do. But now that you're describing it, I need to do this.
I do it with a lot. I mean, I make lamb sausages all the time. I make fish, which basically you're supposed to call it a saucy son. You're not supposed to call it a sausage, but, it's so easy.
I mean, you've been holding out on me because we've done this show for a few years now and you have never shared.
I have not made them in a really long time. So then I just cram it. I put the casing on the end of my big funnel and I
just push it.
Push it through with my thumb and, you know, pack it in there and twist it off and continue. And then I just roasted them. and we ate them all.
Wow. So, no, of course, one
I
of the
I didn't
first-
make a big batch of it. I mean, I made a very small batch, but yeah.
One of the first things I thought of as you were describing is, okay, vegan, go. What do you use for casing?
You don't. You don't. Well, I mean, basically you make your mixture and you do it like you would do a compound butter. So you would put it in a piece of saran wrap, you know, and tighten it. And like you're making a snake with Play-Doh, you would spread it out in the saran wrap. You know, when you make a compound butter, you make like a snake with the plastic wrap on it. And then you twist the ends. That's basically what you would do because you're not using a casing in that case. Right?
So you're cooking it. What would you do? Would you steam it in that saran wrap?
That would just be to form it and you could freeze it at that point and then you could roast it. You could do, you know, what other items would you have in it? If you're making it vegan, you would have everything basically that you just put in the seitan or you would have, you know, that's why I don't understand when you're mentioning these items, I don't understand why you wouldn't throw a handful of, you know, drained spinach in it or shredded mushrooms or, you know, something else to make it.
Or potato or whatever.
Yeah,
it seems like
when you're making it that way, it's like it's the base for something. Like I feel like it should have something else in there. But I don't know.
Like
vegan, so I don't, you know, that's probably.
I don't know either. And maybe I'll discover this great thing and I'll, you know, trademark it and I'll make bazillion dollars.
Well, maybe speak to, you know, you're making this for your client. Maybe have a conversation with her and say, you know, why wouldn't this be acceptable if I had it? The first thing my brain goes through to is spinach, like, you know, chopped, sauteed, drained, cook all the moisture off, just, you know, sort of dry, secco.
That would certainly add something to the seitan, but
yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily do spinach because I'm trying to make something that is supposed to simulate meat. So you kind of want it to be neutral.
Yeah.
You know, you can get some flavor with your what?
So maybe potatoes.
Potatoes or
shredded potatoes.
Parsnip. I don't know.
But then now it's becoming a. Then it would become. You know. Now you're leaning towards potato croquette in a way.
Right. Right.
It's interesting.
But anyway, so I might have to put homemade sausage on my, and that was what I wanted to talk about next was because we have this, I do have a week off or almost a week off after Christmas,
right?
Which I'm very grateful for. And I wanted to work on some projects around the house, but I wanted them to be something that I wouldn't have to spend a lot of money on. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to buy tile for your bathroom, you're going to spend some money. So okay, I don't have anything left to paint. Right. The whole house is painted except for my bedroom, which I like the paint color, and my bathroom, I'm okay with the paint color. So the painting is not going to give me satisfaction. Uh-huh. So I think I'm going to be cooking. I think I'm going to try to do some things that I, to touch. First off, I'm going to make, and I did make it last year, the bacalao stew that you talked about last week.
Good.
So I'm ordering, we're going to pick up on Sunday, the salt cod. So I Beautiful. Have enough days to soak it.
Good.
And you always use leeks, I think, right?
Leeks,
when you do that.
I do onion and leek.
Mm-hmm. Onion and leek and garlic and tomato products.
And the Kalamata olives and fish stock. Perfect.
Right. I'm going to actually, the fish stock. So you use real fish stock for that, or can you use clam juice, or I have shrimp bouillon.
You can use any combination of any of those. Yep. Absolutely. Okay.
So I forgot about the olives. I actually might ask you to text me just bullet point that I think I'll remember.
You'll have Kalamata to listen olives. To the episode.
Nah, I don't like listening to our voices.
Yeah, I don't either. It's funny, right? Mm-hmm. I know. I hear you. Oh no. You've frozen. What happened?
I'm ashamed to say this.
You just froze. We just lost you, Deirdre.
But I have never. You're freezing too.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right, let's just try to get through it. We got a few minutes left.
We got seven
minutes. So I'm ashamed to say that I've never cooked low and slow calamari.
Okay.
Never. I've always quick cooked it, you know, for like.
You've never put it in a
squid and conch salad or fried calamari.
You've never had it in
a
stew?
No, I've put it in, in like a bouillabaisse where I put it at the last second.
Right.
But I've never done low and slow calamari. Of course, when you cook octopus, you have to cook it low and slow.
Right.
When you cook calamari, you have the choice. You can do quick and hot or mm-hmm. low and slow. I've never done low and slow.
Oh, gosh. We're
not going to do seven fishes. But I want a low and slow calamari that doesn't have tomato product in it. Go.
All right.
What do I do? Low and
doesn't
slow
have
and
tomato product in it. I mean, I would do, you know, like
yeah,
I was doing any other.
Yeah, the recipes have tomato product.
Well, you do it without the tomato product. Do, you know, just like you would do a white.
So what I'm thinking.
Like you would do a linguine with white. Yeah.
Right. Like a linguine. Exactly. So my point is that when I tried to Google this and look up a recipe that was low and slow. Oh, calamari. Every single recipe had tomato product. And I thought, okay, so I would like to get away from the tomato product because I'm already doing the bacalao stew.
Right.
So what I think I'm going to do is treat it almost like a linguine with clams, but I'll do my calamari low and slow with white wine, oil,
garlic,
fish stock, garlic, onion, let it
parsley.
Low and slow, and parsley and lemon, and put that over pasta.
That sounds delicious.
Right?
That sounds really good.
Well, you can't find a recipe for that. I'll tell you what. Everything is with tomatoes. So I'm kind of psyched about this.
Good.
This thing. I also would really, and I know I've talked about this before, and I just, what?
I was, yeah, you saw, I was, so you have to be careful how long you cook it, because it's going to, you know, immediately it's going to start seizing up as the proteins get hard. It's going to be very firm, but, and then right. it'll get to a nice consistency where it's tender. But then if you let it go a little bit too far, it's going to be mashed. It's going to, you know, it's going to fall apart. So you have to be really careful.
Really?
Yeah.
I was thinking 45 minutes to an hour. Does that sound?
That sounds
so
long.
That's not
to
that
me.
Slow. Would,
yeah. Well.
Maybe 35 minutes.
You just have to check it. You know, just check it frequently. Right. Because once you get to the point of it being tender, it's not going to be that much farther past that where it's going to really start to break down.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to do it. And good. I can't wait to tell you how it turns
out. Yeah,
I
know.
That's another
exciting.
New thing to me. And the other thing that, I know we've talked about before is it's been on my list for many years of things I've never done, things that I want to do the holiday week, mm-hmm. is sweetbreads.
Oh, yeah.
You've made sweetbreads before, yes?
Yes, but just, you know, sautéed, flambéed with cognac or, you know, just the traditional preparation. Yep. Mario loves them.
Well, Gabrielle
used to
Hamilton.
He used to order when we would go to a restaurant.
Well, Gabrielle Hamilton, she on one of her PBS episodes talked about it, and she actually brines the sweetbreads overnight before cooking them and then makes them with a, like bacon and a brown butter sauce.
Mm,
so
that sounds good.
I have to see whether, of course, now that I'm doing my shopping online, when I go to ShopRite, I can't find sweetbread. So I think I'm going to have to call the meat department and say,
right,
hey, you know,
order it.
Can you put this in my cart?
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking of cooking the week that I'm off.
That sounds great.
Maybe some soups that I'll keep in the freezer for the winter. It's almost like between the two of us, if I really want to cook and freeze things, I need a second fridge.
Yeah.
We have a fantastic fridge.
You
it's
do.
Huge,
I love your fridge.
Oh, it's the best.
I know. Well, I know. So you have a garage. Maybe it's time to, you know, where I got mine. We had a fridge in our garage for years and years, or, you know, a refrigerator freezer. And I mean, I would completely be lost because I have all of Uncle Joe's, you know, portioned foods in there. And ours died probably about a month after we moved. And I went on one of those like marketplace, let go, offer up, one of those sites. And yes, we had to drive to, I think it was Bryn Mawr, like outside of Philly. But for $100, yeah. I pretty much got a really nice stainless steel wash, you know, refrigerator freezer. You have a perfect spot right off your driveway, put it in your garage.
Yeah.
You're going to start doing more cooking.
Especially for the winter. Yeah.
Yeah. It really is a lifesaver. I mean, I find when we have people around, you know, I have beverages in there. It's always got wine in there. You know, it's kind of a nice, it's a luxury to have.
Yeah. Imagine when we're going to have people around again. I was actually fantasizing sitting in at my dining room, you know, our open kitchen, dining, living space. And I was visualizing people.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, for you, it's really impactful because you've just moved. You're in a new place. You want to share your new space with people. Absolutely. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait. Maybe in another 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Am I 5 months away from a dinner party, Laura?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. All right, my friend, we are out of time.
All right.
Merry Christmas, right, everyone. We will not be doing a show next week. I will be recuperating.
Correct.
Hopefully, I'll report back when I'm bionic. and everybody have a healthy, happy.
Get those painkillers, dude.
Don't worry. I'm on them. Okay, everybody.
Okay.
Talk to you next time.
Bye. Happy holidays.